And welcome back. You have reached Politics Doesn't Have to Suck, but it does. I'm your host, Richard Selesky, and today we're going to take a deep dive into what could possibly be one of the most fascinating and yet unknown parts of World War II. Today's episode is going to be called The Secret Luxury Prison, Trent Park, and how the British have given us the blueprint to solve issues today. Now, in the autumn of 1939, the British War Office requisitioned a large mansion in North London called Trent Park. Their reasoning was kind of mysterious. The house was earmarked for, quote, special purposes. And the work undertaken there was kept strictly under wraps. No locals had any idea as to what was taking place behind its walls. There was a reason behind that. This was precisely as intended. For Trent Park was the site, of one of the most secretive intelligence operations of World War II. It was to this luxurious estate that the most important of Adolf Hitler's captured generals, along with other high-ranking prisoners of war, were brought for interrogation. Trapped in the gilded cage were figures like generals Wilhelm von Thoma and Hans-Jürgen von Arnim, apprehended in North Africa, and Dietrich von Choltitz, who surrendered in Paris. What none of these commanders knew was that the entire house was bugged. Not just the interrogation rooms, but the bedrooms, the living areas in which they talked among themselves when the Allied interrogation officials were off duty. A team of secret listeners monitored every word and indiscretion, hoping that the prisoners' private chats would divulge German military secrets. Believe it or not, the trees in the beautiful grounds around Trent Park actually had microphones. There was barely any place in the entire park that the British could not hear the prisoners speak. They used state-of-the-art microphones, specially designed just for this house. How these eavesdroppers achieved their goal and the role they ultimately played in the war is the subject of a new book, and that's what got me excited about this. The book called The Walls Have Ears. It's an astonishing account, not just because the intelligence the listeners uncovered, but also the manner in which it was obtained. Trent Park was the chief project of Thomas Kendrick, who in 1939 was named head of an M room. The M stood for mic'd. The soldier spy had honed his craft working for Britain's secret intelligence service in pre-war Vienna. Now overseeing the Trent Park prisoners, Kendrick took unorthodox practices to new extremes. Not only did the agent put high-ranking German prisoners through softball interrogations designed to lower their guard, he wined and dined them in luxurious surroundings, including supervised day trips to Harrods and the Savoy Hotel in London. You could not believe the accounts of what happened when Winston Churchill found out that the British taxpayer was funding lunches for high-ranking German generals. Now, they hoped that once they were back home at Trent Park, the Germans would be lulled into a false sense of security and unwittingly spill their secrets into hidden microphones. Adding to the illusion of affluent hospitality, Kendrick hired a Scottish aristocrat, Lord Aberfeldy, as the prisoner's welfare officer. A cousin of the king, or so the Germans were told, he was a regular visitor to Trent Park. His role was to flatter the German generals and slowly win their confidence, telling them that King George VI himself had ordered him to look after the captured commanders and ensure they were treated with accordance to their status. Those enemy officers never realized that his lordship was actually an MI-19 agent named Ian Monroe. And even as Kendrick's listeners recorded their every word, one prisoner concluded that the British were ultimately too stupid to bug their conversations. How wrong he was. One of the earliest pieces of intelligence that the British listeners overheard concerned the strength of the German U-boat fleet and their tactics. The losses sustained during the Norwegian campaign of 1940. They also picked up details of a newly invented torpedo that sensed magnetic fields of British ships, allowing the Admiralty to take protective measures. Yet another conversation revealed details of the German experimental weapons center in a small island called Peenemünde. This intelligence led to, in August 1943, Operation Crossbow, a vast Royal Air Force bombing raid that left Peenemünde a smoldering ruin. Unbelievable aspects were covered. But the most important thing was they were able to know the feelings of the German leadership and the German people. They found out which German generals and leaders were Nazis, which were not. They found out, regrettably too late, about atrocities against the Jewish people, about military tactics. But they would have never found out if they didn't take the time to learn who the Germans were. Who were the good guys? And yeah, there were a few. And who were the bad guys? And that's the next part of the story. We'll be right back. Thanks for coming back. Because now we discuss how this comes into play today. It's become almost cartoonish to claim you understand who you perceive as your enemy, anyone you disagree with. You, at your heart, you don't need to speak to them. You know how they think, and you know how they feel. And that's led to some very regrettable impacts. Now, I am not equating the two, but if you take a look at critical race theory today, critical race theory recognizes that systemic racism is part of American society and challenges the beliefs that allow it to flourish. There's a quote here from Kimberly Crenshaw. Critical race theory is a practice. It's an approach to grappling with a history of white supremacy. And I apologize, I've got the worst possible time for groundskeeping to maintain the yard out front. It's an approach to grappling with the history of white supremacy that rejects the belief that what's in the past is in the past, and that the laws and systems that grow from the past are detached from it. Critical race theorists believe that racism is an everyday experience for most people of color, and that a large part of society has no interest in doing away with it because it benefits white elites. Many also believe that American institutions are racist and that people are privileged or oppressed just by their race. While this theory was started as a way to examine how laws and systems promote inequality, it has since expanded. Critical race theory attends not only to law's transformative role, which is often celebrated, but also to its role in establishing the very rights and privileges that legal reform was set up to dismantle. Like American history itself, a proper understanding on the ground upon which we stand requires a balanced assessment, not a simplistic commitment to jingoistic accounts of our nation's past and current dynamics. There's a lot of resistance to critical race theory. According to one article, it's because conservatives accuse it of poisoning discussions on racism. President Trump's opposition to teaching of the 1619 Project and banning it from federal agencies by calling it divisive anti-American propaganda. When, as with everything, there's a little bit of truth. What could happen if, as a society, we took the time to understand the core values of people, who they are, not just delegate them to a category based on their melanin levels? What if we took the time to find out who a person was? Do you think that if we found out what your employees had in common versus what separated them, not only would the employees' lives be better, but your company would be better? Inclusive leadership is the future. The British showed us this in the 1940s. Listen to who you see as your enemy and find out who is and who is not. You can learn more by listening than lecturing. One of my favorite phrases is, you'll get more by pulling me by pushing than pushing me. What if we could make a difference in today's society employing 1940s British beliefs in learning and understanding? I think we can. I encourage you to go to www.tc-university.org and learn about inclusive leadership, how to bring out the best of people by finding who they are, and then systemically changing and measuring the changes to make a difference in everyone's life. If you have any comments or questions, don't hesitate to reach out to my social media or just go to our website and set up an appointment. I'm Richard Selesky. I look forward to hearing from you.